At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The only way to lose fat consistently is no carbs, keto or carnivore only.
Wow. I wonder what caused someone to say that. Maybe it's this video with one of my favorite fitness experts, Dr. Mike Isratel with Renaissance Periodization. It looks like he was consulted and this video came out.
Actually, the only citation in the description.
Losing weight is hard, and unfortunately, your body is sabotaging you every step of the way. Your body is a biological machine that follows the laws of thermodynamics and needs...
Wait a second.
Did Dr. Mike write the second sentence, but not the first?
Maybe so. Losing weight is hard, but your body follows the laws of thermodynamics.
Yeah. I would say... losing weight is sometimes hard, sometimes easy, and sometimes in between.
Accurate. How are you going to argue with that?
It's energy and raw materials to stay alive, which is why you eat. The energy from food is measured in calories, and you need a certain amount to power your internal machines. Your brain thinks, your heart pumps, your gut digests, your immune system immunes, and you contract your muscles to move around. The harder a movement is, the more calories you burn. An hour of walking burns about 260 calories. Moderate swimming, 430. Biking, 600. Running, 700.
I'm going to touch on running a bit there. 700 calories an hour.
Yeah, this is a very rough estimate. If I run for an hour and I run at a pretty good pace, 6 to 7 minutes, I burn something like 1,300 to 1,500 calories, around 7 minute a mile pace on average. So these are very rough estimations, and it's just a good sign that you should individualize your regimen, and surely they'll talk about this. I love the video production. I like how they say the immune system immunes. It's well-directed. I don't know where they got all their money from. Maybe Bill Gates or something.
Small donation.
How small?
North of $500,000.
Wow. I never thought that I would see Bill Gates funding a video from Dr. Mike.
This is the collaboration you didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Was that on your 2024 bingo card?
It was, but not for this Dr. Mike, for the other Dr. Mike.
If you eat more calories than you burn, your body stores them mostly in the form of fat. 1 kilogram or 2 pounds of fat is about 7,000 calories. Seems simple. To lose weight, you have to burn more than you eat, so fat is turned back into energy. There are two ways to do this. Eating less, which we'll cover in another video, and burning more, say by moving around aimlessly, also called working out.
That last sentence, moving around aimlessly, also called working out.
So since this is a Dr. Mike consultation video, I assume they mean resistance training, training to failure, full range of motion, team full ROM, right? I'm a Dr. Mike. I'm
it
a Dr. Isratel
like
fan.
Sounds like they're saying instead of intentional training, it's unintentional training. You're not going in with any specific plan. You just go into the gym and you think, I'll come in here and I'll move around aimlessly.
Or even worse, you're just walking around and digging up tubers. That's not resistance training whatsoever.
Not aimless. You're digging up tubers.
Yeah.
Just an interesting group of words that got pushed together. Kind of reads like AI wrote it.
We also get told early on that exercising is healthy somehow, so working out should kill two birds with one stone. Unfortunately, this doesn't exactly work out. It's one of these frustrating experiences where you do what you think's right, only to not see the results you deserve. In reality, exercising is a bad way to burn fat. And until recently, we fundamentally misunderstood what moving around a lot does to our bodies. The myth of the workout. A few years ago, scientists began to compare populations in industrialized societies, which sit a lot, to hunter-gatherer communities, who move around a lot. The Hadza people in Tanzania walk an average of 9 kilometers a day to find wild plants and hunt animals, dig for tubers, climb trees for honey, or collect water. They can move more in a single day than an office worker in a week. So, of course, they burn more calories, right? But it turns out that the Hadza burn the same amount of calories per day as a typical person in an industrialized country, around 1,900 for women and around 2,600 for men, which doesn't make sense at all. It's also not their genes, since it's the same.
Do you want to comment on, I believe this is the study that they reference. This is the largest one I'm aware of, looking at the Hadza exercise, yes. Energy expenditure. Bit of exaggeration there, saying they walk more in a single day than an office worker works in an entire week.
Yeah, not true. About three times as much.
Yeah, about threefold more.
And I also thought it was interesting. They said the average Hadza walks 9 kilometers. The males walk something like 11 to 12 kilometers. The females walked 6 kilometers. And they only had 13 or 14 as the sample size, anywhere from 18 years old up to something like 65 years old. So there's a huge variation. And although they had 100 Western individuals in the study, the average individual that was in the Western group for the males weighed 80 kilograms and the average hunter-gatherer tribe weighed 50 kilograms as a male.
Yeah, which is about 110 pounds versus about 180 pounds.
Yeah, so it's ridiculous to compare someone who has 80 pounds of metabolic expenditure, that's obviously a huge component of how many calories you're going to burn, with somebody who has extremely low total body mass and low lean body mass too. I think that's less than half. I know that's less than half of the lean body mass and total body mass of Dr. Mike.
Yeah, that is a very lean, very small person, not a lot of lean body mass. So their caloric expenditure is going to be relatively low, and they're not sprinting after food necessarily.
Same for other hunter-gatherer tribes. So the confused scientists looked at similar measurements in individual countries. It got even stranger. Active people who work out regularly do burn more than inactive people, but only very little, often as low as 100 calories, the equivalent of a single apple.
So if you burn an extra 100 calories every single day, somebody else is not burning those 100 calories every single day, assuming you take in the same number of calories, that would seem to stack up over a year. That would be, was that 36,000 calories per year?
Yeah, it certainly adds up even over decades. You know, the average adult in a developed country will slowly gain weight over the course of their lifetime, usually bad weight. And a lot of times if it's lean body mass, it's just the lean body mass that's inevitably added as they add adipose tissue, something like 10% of adipose tissue. A graph that will help is this one that we'll pull up that shows the four different expenditure methods of your metabolism, I suppose, for lack of a better word. I know that Lane Norton and a lot of the BioLane team has talked about this. I know Astrid has talked about this, but you have your resting metabolic rate, the thermic effect of food, NEAT, which is, think of it as fidgeting, and exercise. So what the devil's advocate for this study is that as you exercise more, your NEAT goes down. And we did find an excellent study, and it had one example of a sedentary person, two examples of a moderately active person, one that exercises a lot, one that does not exercise a lot, but perhaps they have ADHD or they're fidgeting a lot or they're on Phentermine or something. And certainly you can't have the same energy expenditure within a day for those two people with the same diet and the same resting metabolic rate, as long as one person's NEAT is particularly high and one is particularly low. And we'll link this article and all the other ones in the description, because what I suppose this video failed to do is provide enough detail.
Or a single citation.
Yeah. So we found them, and we're pretty sure that these are the ones that they reference. Yeah.
The problem with this chart in the context of this video is that all of these bars should reach the exact same level regardless of the amount of exercise performed.
Yeah.
So what gives?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that gives is the hunter-gatherer tribe that they chose had very low resting metabolic rates, much lower than the average person in a developed country. And the other thing is that they really didn't exercise a lot. The calories expended doing their hunter-gatherer activities and the walking that they did certainly burned some calories, but not very many. So that's another confounding variable, I suppose. And you would think that any scientist would account for very basic things like body size. Yes, it can be difficult to find a population of males in developed countries that's average lean body mass percentage is 14%, and a female group that's average lean body mass is 20%. And we'll put the chart up there, and you can see for yourself if you look at the data. But it seems like the researchers in this case were looking for something specific and trying to say this for a purpose, for whatever purpose, I don't know. I just assume it has to do with grant money or whatnot. Or because when you publish a study like this, that's against the norm, it is relatively well received. But certainly the, and I'm talking about the hunter-gatherer HADSA study, this study that is titled Why Exercise by Itself is Often Ineffective for Weight Loss but Crucial for Weight Management is absolutely true. And even when you say exercise is ineffective for weight loss, it's still effective for fat loss and body composition changes.
Yeah. And there's even I put the screen grab in here from this. This was just sort of the first exercise study that I came across that was 12 weeks at least. And this is only 30 minutes of exercise 5 days a week, which is sort of right at the recommendation of like the American Heart Association, CDC. And it was either only aerobic exercise, only resistance training, or a combination, which they actually split 15 minutes and 15 minutes.
Hmm.
Followed them for 12 weeks, and every single group that was doing some form of exercise had improvements in body composition. Now, the group that was just doing resistance training didn't have much change in body weight, but to your point, their body composition was improved in as little as 12 weeks. And you think, okay, if you repeat this 4 times throughout the year, it's not going to be linear, but you will make continued progress.
Yeah. And over years, as your lean body mass is higher and your body fat is lower, even at the same weight, if you take 10 pounds of lean body mass versus 20 pounds of body fat, then those two body composition changes, increased weight and 10 pounds and 20 pounds respectively, burn about the same amount of calories.
Yeah. I mean, if you take the weight difference between the Western population and the HASDA, which was what? About a 70-pound weight difference. Mm-hmm. Fat is about not quite half as metabolically active as muscle. So on the upper end of that, you're looking at 5 calories per day per pound. That's still, was that 350 pound or 350 calories extra per day that you burn doing nothing as a more sedentary Western population because you have more mass total.
Yeah. So that's like a dividend. That extra lean body mass is giving you calories burned every day, even with zero exercise. Whereas if you exercise, yes, a good rule of thumb is you only keep about 2/3 to 3/4 of the calories that you burn because you reduce your other energy expenditure throughout the day, your NEAT. And obviously that's an average. One of the commenters pulled up a particularly good study on ultramarathon runners, where when they start running, they burn about 6,000 calories per day at the beginning of the ultramarathon. And then it goes down to about 5,500 calories per day. So there's certainly a a bit of metabolic adaptation because, one, they're probably more efficient, and then two, they're just minimizing movements because they have so few calories to burn otherwise.
Yeah, if we go back to that graph we put up, their NEAT or non-exercise activity thermogenesis is going to be compressed if they're spending several hours each day running. They're subconsciously going to tend to move around less. They're going to feel like they have less energy for other leisure activity tasks as they're focused on the sort of one goal, unless they're particularly mindful about that and making sure that they are, you know, hitting a step count or moving about more as they were at baseline.
Treadmill desk.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, we'll keep going.
Sustain them or your new muscles wither away. But in total, your body keeps your calorie budget per unit of you pretty stable. And to make matters worse, if you want to lose fat, your body sabotages you in small and big ways. First of all, when you begin to work out regularly, maybe going for a run in the morning, your body may subconsciously make you move less when you don't pay attention. Maybe you take the elevator instead of the stairs, you sit more when you meet your friends, or you sleep longer, largely balancing out your burn again, preventing you from burning much fat. You can overcome this temporarily if you do actually...
I like this picture. Now, I would say that I'm not a proponent of fat shaming, but if you are in an arrangement like this, and this is what your day-to-day life looks like, you do kind of need to evaluate the decisions you're making. I think that's a fair case to make. And this is probably on the extreme end of the spectrum. I don't think the majority of people are living like this.
It's somewhat hyperbole. One thing that is definitely true is if you have not done a lot of resistance training and you want to lose fat and you start running, swimming, or biking, your appetite is going to be crazy out of control if you're not utilizing other things to control appetite. I know Mike Isratel recently mentioned that his wife had kept off however many pounds for however many years, just being on Ozempic, presumably brand name Ozempic. He tagged Novo Nordisk in the post. So perhaps she has type 2 diabetes. I'm not sure. But certainly for type 2 diabetics, other things to help control the appetite and also control gut motility, gut uptake, gluconeogenesis in the liver, et cetera. There's always caveats. You can individualize that regimen, I suppose. And certainly in this case, the first step is looking at your diet and trying to consume at least 80% whole foods and very few liquid calories. I thought it was hilarious in the example of the stomach being hungry and wanting a cheeseburger. The healthy example,
cheeseburgers.
The healthy example was a Green Goddess shake, which I assume is a calorically dense liquid calorie that's going to provide
a lot of satiety. Sugar in there.
Might be better off just having a cheeseburger, perhaps without the bun. Not because you have to go low carb, but again, the satiety index. So there's no perfect way to switch people's diet or no perfect diet to switch to. But those are my rules of thumbs: high satiety foods, high protein, high fiber. At least 40 grams a day for males, at least 30 grams per day for females, and avoiding unnecessary liquid calories.
You change your life after sitting around for years and suddenly start working out without eating more, this is a shock to your system. You actually do burn more calories and lose fat, so you can lose a few kilos or pounds through exercise. But this is very short-lived. Your body adapts and burns fewer and fewer extra calories each day until it restores its original calorie budget. After a few months, you burn basically the same amount you did when you didn't work out. Bizarre. And now we're getting to the actual reason why.
I suppose that's possible on an extreme case. Not a few kilos. I think that's nonsense. But if someone loses 50 pounds, even if it's fat mass, their total energy expenditure, resting metabolic rate, those things are going to go down on average unless they've increased their exercise volume. And they're probably more efficient at the movements they're doing, whether they're biking or running or whatever form it is. The body does adapt to some degree, but like we mentioned earlier, they're probably still banking about 2/3 of those calories burned. So if you look at, you know, your watch or treadmill, that probably overestimates things, but you could think, okay, probably a little more than half of this is what I'm actually burning of extra that the body is not going to be able to entirely compensate for by reducing metabolic rate. But to your point, certainly can compensate for by increasing appetite.
Yeah. And I'm certainly not really a avid listener of Greg Doucette anymore for multiple reasons. But his concept of being a better butter burner is quite good. As you become a more advanced athlete, you are better and more efficient at burning calories. So I can go and sit on the Echo bike at the gym and text my concierge patients or whatnot, and I can work while I do that. And over an hour, I can pretty easily burn an extra 500 calories, which, as you mentioned, I'll probably bank at least 330 to 350 of those. And even if my appetite increases slightly, I can use various strategies of eating foods of relatively low caloric density but high nutrient density. And over time, even if my net calorie change is only negative 50 that day, it will lead to success more in the long run. Yeah. Whereas if you're not trained, then even a 500 calorie burning on a bike, you might not want to do that because you'll have such low energy. You're not going to be able to wrestle your kids in the evening. You're not going to be able to get up and get a good resistance training session in before work. So you're better off doing those two things.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard to make a case that resistance training is not going to be more beneficial in the long term. But realistically, everyone should be a hybrid athlete. I suppose you could call the people that were in the study doing 15 minutes of resistance training, 15 minutes of cardio five times a week, hybrid athletes.
Yeah.
I wish I would have thought of that when I was going over the study.
Yeah, exactly. I just like saying hybrid athlete. As our friend Nick Bear says, there's no such thing as a hybrid athlete. It's just people who are training properly that are doing both heavy resistance training with progressive overload and cardio.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, tell me you're a hybrid athlete.
I do heavy resistance training with progressive overload and cardio.
Oh, so you follow the CDC guidelines?
Yes. Well, for that.
All right.
What does your body do with the energy that you're not using to move around? We're simplifying a lot here, and this is relatively new science, but in a nutshell, there are many different systems in your body trying to do their job as well as possible. And if there's extra energy, they seem to use it. Unfortunately, this is bad. When your immune cells detect injuries or infections, they trigger inflammation. Fighter cells, alarm chemicals, and fluids flood into your tissue. This is crucial, but it also causes damage, so it needs to be cleaned up quickly or it can become chronic. And chronic inflammation is one of the major contributors to many serious diseases, from cancer to heart failure. If your immune system is on a tight budget, it has to be efficient with inflammation. With lots of free calories, though, it overcommits. Another thing is that your glands produce hormones you don't need, like cortisol, the stress.
Should we correct that hormone advice?
They did hit us with a simplifying alert, but I don't think there's any version of simplification that makes it to where you don't need cortisol.
Yeah, the simplification I think they were trying to go for, I don't know if this would be steelmanning their argument or whatnot, is that when you have metabolic syndrome, you have more cytokines like interleukin 6, your CRP is higher, your visceral adiposity is higher, and you do get more autoimmune diseases. And then they add the statement, another thing is that your glands produce hormones you don't need. Again, I suppose insulin would be the one. Insulin and IGF-1 is probably what they should bring up here. But instead they go to cortisol, the stress hormone, because if you're stressed, you're too fight or flight and you have too much cortisol and worry about your cortisol. And really you should be worrying about your insulin and your IGF-1 and to some degree your GLP-1. And not as much your cortisol.
Yeah. And the alternative to not having that insulin around is becoming diabetic. So you probably do want the insulin rather than not having it. We should work to control it long term. The IGF-1, that's sort of a compelling case because the excess insulin signaling driving that is associated with cancers in certain populations.
Correct.
So you see this question a lot when people are eating a lot of protein, have a higher IGF-1, young adults who are in their essentially lowest risk of cancer of their lives. In the inflammatory cytokine, I think that idea is valid, where if you are overnourished, you're overloading the system. Your body is not really going to like that. So like the IL-6 or TNF-alpha, I think there is some data supporting that the GLP-1s, probably by proxy of not overloading the system, can reduce that inflammation, and a lot of people do you know, with weight loss alone or with a GLP-1 or any method they're using to get there, report better function of their joints, less joint pain, and I think that's a great thing. So there is a grain of truth in this, I suppose.
Yeah. So now that they've mentioned cortisol, I suppose that now they're going to go Stacy Sims and talk about fight or flight and the gift of fear and things like that.
It is in the same vein in terms of being counter to more solidified scientific principles.
Stress hormone, which triggers your fight or flight response. Crucial for survival, but if you have too much of it...
I like this one.
Yeah, a very angry individual.
Our editor can put a text bubble there that says, nobody wants to work anymore.
Yeah, they're all quiet quitting, losing their passion. But in all seriousness, stress modulation, that's right. That's why stress is a pillar of health. Just like you can learn to lift weights in the gym or do resistance training, wherever, at your home. And the burn from that can feel good. You can learn to love that feeling, get endorphins released. You can also learn to love the feeling of stress. Some people call this the grind. I certainly think there's a lot of downsides to hustle culture, whatever that is. And there's a lot of downsides to greed, certainly. But learning to embrace and appreciate the difficulty of life, because life is too short and too hard, is a skill that should be learned just like lifting weights.
Yeah. If you're growing in any area of your life, it probably is and should be slightly uncomfortable. I think that's a fair case to make.
Progressive overload the stress in your life.
There you go.
You get, well, very stressed all the time. Chronic stress is a major cause for a bouquet of health issues, including your mental state. For our ancestors who moved a lot and had to deal with sudden bursts of activity, fleeing from a lion, attacking that bison, this cortisol was crucial. But if you live a modern, sedentary lifestyle, your body is ready for action that doesn't happen, hurting itself in the process. Your body evolved to move regularly and is fine-tuned to a certain base level of
activity. Pretty atrocious form on the rower there.
Activity. If this activity is missing, it still uses almost the identical amount of energy, just on stupid stuff. This is why you burn almost the same amount of calories, whether you work out or not. By working out, you're not doing anything extra, you're doing what your body is literally made to do. Working out is not a magic bullet, but it seems to restore an internal physical balance that seriously affects your body. And this is also why regular exercise is so incredibly healthy. The evidence is incredibly clear here. It reduces chronic inflammation and stress, it's good for your heart, may ease depression, and makes you live longer and better. Movement is not really made to burn your fat, though. Why humans are so hungry. When your ancestors evolved, they had to work hard for calories. Sometimes it would be easy and they could afford to chill out quite a bit. But in hard times, they had to move quite a bit to feed themselves, walk longer to find prey, or dig longer to find tubers. If extra movement burned more calories, this would lead to a spiral of starvation. The less food you find, the more energy you need to find food, which doesn't...
But hard times in the past did lead to spirals of starvation. Throughout all of human history, starvation has been the biggest issue that we've had.
Yeah. Up until just the very recent history.
I'm not an anthropologist like the author of this paper, but I do know that starvation is a huge issue.
It doesn't even fill you up because you moved more. It's like taking on more debt when you're in the red. It works for a while, but then you go bankrupt and die. So, for your ancestors, being able to move a lot without burning extra calories was a matter of life and death. Okay, but this means the obesity epidemic of the modern world is not primarily caused by laziness, but by overeating. Humans evolved to be mad for calories because of our extremely hungry brains and our extremely useless kids. Kids are cute, but unlike other species, human kids have to be fed and cared for by adults for years before they become even remotely useful. Because the human brain not only eats up about 20% of all our calories at rest, twice as much as our closest ape relatives, it also takes a lot of time to develop through playing, learning, and honing social skills, all the things that make us human.
I'm surprised that the author of the hunter-gatherer study is an anthropologist. Because again, throughout human history, for better or for worse, even young children are particularly helpful in the farm. On agrarian societies, in fact, I believe in Bolivia or Zambia, the one of the groups that was the farmer side of this study, we can put the graphic up here, I believe the youngest was 14. And kids much younger than 14 have been particularly helpful throughout human history. I suppose, to play devil's advocate, you could say at least the first 4 years of life or so are particularly inefficient.
Yeah, I think that's, if you're looking at it purely from a rational standpoint, like what use is this two-year-old to the current state of the village or the tribe? Sure, you can make the case that they are decreasing efficiency, but absolutely necessary for the survival of the community.
Yeah.
And years of social skill training. In a typical ancestral tribe, some members would spend the day searching for plants, others hunting or gathering honey, others nurturing kids. And at the end of the day, we'd share the calories so that no one would end up hungry. Being frenetic calorie harvesters seems to be deeply part of what makes us human. It's not a bug, but a feature. But today, it seems as if that feature has turned on us. We can't stop overproducing food and overeating. If you want to lose fat, food is the answer. We'll cover diet in the next part. So to conclude, you'll probably not lose nearly as much fat by working out as you hoped, but you will do something more important. Give your body balance and make...
Slight update to that study. You will probably not lose as much weight as you think working out, especially doing cardio. However, over time, if you exercise, especially resistance train, it is the best way to maintain your body composition and improve it and lose fat even. Lose fat in the long term by resistance training. In addition to that, yes, we're very efficient calorie harvesters, but we've actually been very efficient calorie harvesters for hundreds of years. It's really in the last 50 to 60 years as the obesity crisis and epidemic has come up, 1 billion obese people, more or less, worldwide right now. What I believe is most correlated and causatory of that is ultra-processed foods.
So it's not that we're smoking less.
It's not that we're smoking less, and it's not even that we're significantly better at getting huge calorie surpluses. For 150 years or so, really since the Industrial Revolution, we have been quite good at harvesting things like oil and fat, and we've had a lot of calories. They're just not as tasty.
Yeah, putting things together in novel ways, like creating this sort of, not all ultra-processed things, because a protein bar is ultra-processed, even if it's 150 calories and 30 grams of protein. Mm-hmm. But when you, thinking of the video we were talking about, Thomas DeLauer talking about the cotton candy burrito full of candy, yeah. It's like, that's a absolute monstrosity of a food.
Yeah, that's true. Max Lugavier has a good take on this as well, where you want to emphasize whole foods wherever possible for many reasons. One of the reasons being we don't really know what the downstream effects will be, and we can't parse out causation and correlation for a lot of things like autoimmune disease, neurodegenerative disease, and also cancer.
All right. Well, I think that's a wrap for today's podcast. Not a podcast, actually, a reaction video. Got to get used to saying that since we're doing more of these now. So if you found this useful, I think our last reaction video, people said, please do more of these. Then let us know in the comments if we got anything wrong. If you're an anthropologist that disagrees, please let us know in the comments. But thank you so much for your time and for watching, and may God bless you with health and happiness.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.